Are we there? We're finally here. Oh my gosh. Okay. Namaste, everyone. Greetings. Om Sri Satche Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Paramatma Ki Jai, Gurudev Bhagawan Ki Jai, Satcha Sangha Ki Jai. If anyone has any points to bring into the satsang, anything at all, would be good now to raise your hand. We only have an hour because there's another satsang today and there's a few things to do in between. And we leave for France tomorrow. It's been a good journey and it's been a really strong journey. And for those who cared for Donnie, the memorial was wonderful. People even came from different states to just be together for a moment in Donnie's memory. So that's complete. And I was going through Akron, where I was born, and I think it's the last time I go through there in this lifetime, which is perfectly okay, by the way. It's absolutely fine. But I was thinking, this is a completion in many ways. Mm-hmm. So who is DM? Here we have a... And who is that? Uh-huh. Namaste.
Namaste, Shanti Mai. Can you hear me? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for everything. I would like to say thank you. First of all, can you hear me well?
I can hear you perfectly. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So okay. My question today is, I have not practiced with the, what is this mantra called? Om Purnamadaha.
Yeah.
And I would like to know, is there a certain rhythm to the prayer?
I have never heard the mantra chanted.
So only recited?
No, I've only read it.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why don't you stay with the Gayatri?
I do. I am with the Gayatri and also okay. With the Medicine Buddha mantra. But for some reason, yeah, it's calling me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It may be that the meaning is calling you as well. Mm-hmm. So what was your question, really?
I would like, you know, the Gayatri has...
Oh, you would like the cadence.
Yes.
You might look it up on YouTube and see if there's some pundits who are chanting it. I never have. I simply read it in the Upanishads. It entered my heart. It is my house. And I've never heard it chanted.
Okay. Yeah, I did look it up already, but I haven't really found anything. And I was just wondering. Yeah, but thank you.
Right. But the mantra can be spoken out of the heart, just like the Gayatri. The cadence is really wonderful to have. It adds to the well, we can say the authenticity, but the authenticity of that mantra cannot be added to, really. But you know what I'm saying. It could add to it, but I have never heard it. So since you ask, I will see if I can find out.
Thank you.
I have a few pundits who I can ask if they know the chant to that mantra. That would be wonderful to know.
Yes, thank you very much.
Just you're very welcome.
Next Sunday, I will not be here, but so you know already.
Okay, I will be, and you won't be, and we'll see you when you do come.
Thank you.
Okay, namaste. Thank you too. Is there anyone else who... So I'm going to watch for hands. There we go. Max and Gabriella.
Namaste.
Namaste, Shantimai.
Smiley people. We're all smiling.
Always so lovely to see you.
So good to see you too. This Zoom satsang, I thank God that we have it.
Yes, me too. I don't really have much today, Shanti Mai, but what I would want to share is that in this in-between part, this review of the meaning of Bhagavad Gita, there's in the beginning you say that it was Sanskrit. The Sanskrit was sung. It was not spoken.
Yes.
And that what gives me goosebumps even now that I'm starting to talk about this is that that the words are not referred to.
No, that's right. They're not referred to. The words
so
are not
what you said was is in Sanskrit when it was when peace with the word Shanti was not referred to as peace, but in the moment it was chanted, it peace
it brings what it says.
Yes.
So there's no reference. Sahara, are you chewing gum or what? Are you eating your breakfast or something? What's going on there? Nothing? Okay. I think sometimes people forget that Zoom is really a satsang, like, you know, but that's okay. We just correct it. That's right. And it was, my view is, and I could be off on this for sure, but I am a language lover in the sense of what the conveyance of words. God was the word, or God was with the word, and God was the word. That to me sounds very accurate, so on the spot. And I might have said that I feel that when we stopped singing our words, like the birds sing their words, that it encouraged separation, because in the song, there's always this this long elongated sound that pulls everything together, like Om. It's a constant ongoing, and there's no chop 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 with Om, and therefore roses are roses and red is red and blue is blue and you are you and I am I and the world is spinning around with everyone in it. If the Om would cease, everything would cease. So that long elongated sound which everything forms from, And Sanskrit was not a reference language. It was an experiential language. I don't tell this very often. Oh, go ahead.
No, please go on.
Okay, I don't tell this very often. Usually there's just not a reason to, and there's not, so it's not told outwardly very often. Many times in my experiences, I keep them very quiet to myself or to very few, and it's not just very few that are favorite, it's just the time, and there's a few there. I usually don't put my spiritual experiences out very much. When I was in Australia, we were at a place called Crocodile Rock, Crocodile Dreaming. And as I stood there, I saw the old Aboriginals with standing, the men, and they were singing and the crocodiles were forming in a long, long line. And they weren't touching the ground yet, but they were moving across Australia. And I just saw also, I am reading the book of the Kogi that Fabian translated, and I had read it as she was translating it. I was very, very fond of it, but I didn't see a couple of the spots that I saw this time. And they were talking also about the singing of language and how the singing of language is the formula for its form. So that's the way Sanskrit was. It was formed by the sound. And that's right. That's right. We know that. We know that by many. I mean, we know that by energy beams. We know that by what chanting does for our heart and our bodies.
Yes.
And lifting our consciousness, it actually does. When one enters the chant and doesn't only sing the chant, but enters the sound of the song, like you would enter Om Purnamataha, you would not, that's not a reference to anything. That's an experiential awareness, so to speak. Maybe those words are not as accurate as I would like, but I think you get the point.
Yes.
That's why I wish in our Sangha that songs weren't just songs, although they are, it's wonderful that they are songs and the people sing them beautifully. However, there's still a missing element, and that is entering the chant and worshiping in the chant and exalting in the chant. This is the best way to chant, is not to be self-conscious about whatever anybody's hearing on either side, but just, you know, I am at the feet of the Lord, so to speak, or whatever your vision is. And I am singing this song for my own, let's say, salvation, you know, saving of from ignorance or whatever it could be like that. But I'm singing this song, and we enter each other in this song and in this song alone. And this is a beautiful way of chanting. And it's missing in our Sangha. They chant beautifully, beautifully, but it's very rare that you see anyone in an exalted state of dissolving into the sound of the music. Seems to me that there's more performance, which is all right. I'm happy. I'm happy with whatever they will do to give this song to the people and be part of it. But there's a place where you're not part of it anymore.
That's so interesting.
Part of it. You are the song.
Yeah. I don't think I have that when I chant.
Well, do. Chant it.
Yes.
Home.
Yes.
Chant it when no one's looking.
There was something.
At exaltation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, sorry. But there was something that came in combination with understanding and hearing from you that it was an experiential language. It brought peace. And what I thought was also having learned about the many meanings, the six meanings of again.
Hug.
Genau. Hug. Each time.
Well, before you go on, those six meanings also are multi meanings. You can take them a long way. Is that true?
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking, I might be completely wrong, and it's much easier than I think, but I thought there's in Sanskrit with such extremely complex words that to have that experience, have these not been people who were deeply immersed in wisdom and knowledge? So I don't have that. Right. How can I have the experience if I don't have that?
Well, you do have that. And that's why I leave it to you.
Okay.
Yeah. And you do have that. You have everything that Jesus has. Mm. You have everything that the Buddha has. And they told you so many times. And Krishna has. Krishna, in the next chapter, in the 10th chapter, he will say to Arjuna, I am Arjuna. That has to be, well, it doesn't have to be. I say it has to be because I feel the urgency of it. But that would be a freedom from denial. And you don't have to say, well, prove it to me.
No.
This is the problem. Prove it to me. I don't see it. Well, whether you see it or not, it's still there. You don't see space, but space is there. You don't see words, but words are there. You don't see your heartbeat, but your heart is beating. You don't see your breath. You don't even notice it most of the time, but you're breathing. So why is it that you, not you, but you as a general you, would need proof that you are a total being created by totality itself? Why do people cling to separation?
Yeah.
When in fact their heart's beating for what they call oneness, with the spiritual community, that we are all one. And I love to hear it. Yet it may not be, you can't say it isn't, but it may not be explored deeply enough to actually realize what it means.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I keep coming up against this. There's still so much I need to learn. I keep forgetting what you say. There's nothing to learn. It's all there. So that's
It's all there. It's a self-discovery. And it's somebody wrote to me about surrender recently. Yes. And they said that they will recommit and recommit. And I said, there's no reason to recommit, because they said, that Maharaji and you say surrender once. This is Maharaji's tone. I adopted this tone to be the way I would move in my life. And I saw that it was really good, other than surrendering and saying, well, I got to surrender again. No, surrender. Will said surrender is honor. Anand, who I really love, his ways of exploration, said that actually surrender and detachment are potential at work. Because when you cease to, when you fight it, you really cut off what is possible. When you think that you need to have God proof, you cut off seeing, because the proof is that you are. That's the big proof.
Thank you, Shantimai.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I love you. Thank you for bringing that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Let's see. We have Tara. Hello, Tara.
Namaste, Shantimai.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Yes. I want to share something. I shared with you that my spiritual seat is at the right place with the lineage, and that it's started to blossom, or I realize that it's blossoming.
Well, what does that mean? I want to know what that means.
Yeah, I come back later to it, but
come to it now.
Okay, now I feel more mature, that I do not cling to sabotage myself, or to it's like I have a strength that is not mine.
It's not yours. You're right, though. I mean, right and wrong. It's accurate.
Yeah. So I feel more and more like a vessel, and not so much doubt anymore.
Not so much doubt.
Yeah.
Not so much doubt. How much doubt is not so much doubt?
Yeah, there's still some doubts.
Wait a minute. Why do you fool with it at all? Why do you have to doubt or not doubt? Why don't you just take doubt and not doubt and put it over here and say, you sit over there for a while until you disappear? We don't need to doubt or not doubt. We don't need that duality anymore.
Yes.
I'm in the throes of discovery of who I am and who all beings are. What that is within me. And the steps are love. So go ahead, please.
On my birthday, the day before my birthday or the night, I had a dream. I was in the womb of my mother and I felt so in love, so much love, 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 love. And then they started these waves of birth. And my body and my skin felt, okay, this is me. So I'm in this love, but this is me. And then I'm prepared to go out in the world, just to, in the world, in the wonder of the world. That was my feeling. And the whole day I stayed in this appreciation of this love and of this wonder of being alive. And then after that, or some days later, there came this questioning of why we lose this love. And listening to you today, it felt like I don't need, it doesn't have to be love. Everything is love. But what I feel is love is not the emotional love anymore.
Good,
so
good.
Yes, I need, sometimes in the mind it's clear, but not the feeling.
May I ask you a question, though, because I want to get the language correct.
Yes.
Is it that love no longer depends on emotion to be?
Yes.
Could you have an emotion in this love that you experience that is vast and broad and undefinable? Could you have an emotional experience in the midst of that kind of love? Well, you don't have
I
to.
Think,
you don't
yeah,
have to.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
These are waves, and I hope I will not get away with these waves. But
well, you don't have to get away from the waves; you just live in them. But be very careful. The reason I ask that question, I want everybody to listen up. The reason I ask that question is because what you have seen about love being unemotional is really wonderful, really wonderful. However, you have to permit everything in that love, everything. And in that love, in that unemotional love, there could be the experience of being uplifted. Like we were talking about chanting with all of the heart, not watching other people. That, I don't find it funny. Not laughing at them, not getting into their space. It's their worship. It's not funny, not even a little bit, actually. It's really rude. So, in that space of a person being exalted in their heart, uplifted in their heart, while they're chanting, that would be an emotion that they might be able to, or they would have, could have, in a state of unemotional love. Is that true? Are you crying?
Yes, I mean,
good,
yeah.
Good, good, good. I'm glad you are. Finally, I'm glad. Good. God bless you. I'm really happy. That you got to stop that, by the way, or else leave the room. Okay?
Okay, thank
That's
you.
That's a good deal. You're welcome. You're very welcome. Because there is such a discovery in the song, and there is such a discovery in the word, and there is such a discovery in Sanskrit that is over just filling a person if they will go there. People don't go there. They sing beautifully. They get uplifted by the beauty of the song. The worship is missing. So, it's very, very important that everyone is supported by one's own moving inward. Whether you're in worship or not, just not bothering with anybody because it's such an intimate moment. Mm-hmm. It's so intimate, huh? It's like making love with God. It really is. And I'm glad you gave a little bit of a tear there. I'm glad your heart ached over that for just a moment. I wouldn't want it to ache very long. It's not my business, but I'm glad that that happened.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I love you.
I love you.
That's easy. So, yes, okay. Sahara?
Namaste, Shanti Mai.
Namaste, Sahara.
I apologize for eating a straight almond.
Yeah, don't do that in satsang. I think that you, of all people, should know better.
Absolutely, I do, Shanti Mai. I'm sorry for that.
Go ahead.
Wanted to touch on the vibrational aspect of Sanskrit as it was being shared by Gabriella, and there was a turn of phrase in that maybe wish to comment, which was that Sanskrit is complex.
Yeah, I agreed. I agree.
And somewhat.
That's right.
With the notion, right? This it was something in the way that it was said, and it is. I've been delving a bit into Sanskrit. I cannot claim understanding or mastery yet, but it is what I've seen is that
yeah, you've got a lifetime to go there, Sahara. Gee, Willikers.
At least a couple 3 days.
I love how you can take it. I love how you laugh at yourself. It's such a flower.
Yeah, what I've seen is that if you can't laugh at yourself, then somebody else probably already is.
That's right. Go ahead.
And it was that the elegance and simplicity of Sanskrit and its ability to contain a great deal of information within that space isn't complexity or difficulty. It is that the phonetic languages like German and English have difficulty in explaining it. So that that complexity arises from trying to explain that vibrational aspect with English, with German. It's not a feature of Sanskrit.
Also, let's take the word Sat Chit Ananda. Satchitananda is a copulative compound in Sanskrit, and it's actually three words. But because there was no space between the words, many of the words are very long. Sat, true, chit, mind, is in ananda, bliss. The true mind is blissful. So it's not a long word. It's three words, a copulative compound, and it flows. Just like Sanskrit does. So when she said complex, I agree with you. It caught me. And then I could see, well, these are very long words. But our language is more complex, isn't it?
It is. And I saw a chart once many years ago when I was in taking linguistics in college. And it was a chart of regularity, it was called. And it was about how many irregular verbs are there, how many special cases of spelling are there, how many oddities are there in the grammatical structures that you have to take into account when you're forming sentence structures. And Sanskrit was way over here as being almost completely regular. And then English was like all the way over here as needing all sorts of special rules about how to pronounce this or spell that, or where do you put a comma? Where do you put a semicolon? How does that, like, there's so many special little rules. And in Sanskrit, it is, they can achieve that apparent complexity via some very, very simple rules that are singular. If you can read, which I cannot, I know some of the vowels now.
Well, you're getting on it.
But if you can read it, if you know the letters, there's only exactly one way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no confusion.
That's
there's,
right.
Like with English, it's opposite.
Each letter has meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So the letters, the letters are constructed for the meaning of the word.
And the variety of meanings that we ascribe to it is a matter of the function of English trying to describe it. It's not that it has all these varied meanings itself.
Right.
It is exactly that.
That's right.
So I just wanted to bring that to the conversation.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you, Sahara. And I appreciate your Sanskrit studies a lot.
And I've got
your mastery.
Hang on.
Your mastery is maybe imminent. Who knows? Maybe it's right over your head.
Any second now, I can feel it coming. Namaste, Shanti Mai.
Namaste, Sahara. Gopi.
Namaste, Shanti Mai.
Namaste.
I sometimes questions are coming and going by their own. This question is always coming back to me. That's why I want to bring it up to you.
Okay. I like to see that cat. That was very good.
Maybe you want to say something.
Yeah, maybe. It's very good. How come that's good and chewing gum is not good, or an almond? Anyhow, go ahead.
Yes. I wrote in the Bhagavad Gita, wishes are the enemies of freedom.
Desire.
Okay, yes, desire.
Yeah, we don't change the word. Because good wishes are kind of innocence. The desires, you know, of course, if you have an expectation with your wish, it's a desire. A wish is a desire. But it's, they're really speaking about, or Krishna's really speaking about being distracted by the construction of your own ideas that you follow and forget God.
That means, My question was, what is with the wishes I have if I'm praying to God to develop me, to heal me, to save me?
Well, those are desires that are not going to hurt you.
Okay.
The desires that'll probably hurt you is, where's my man? How come he's not here? This is what he should look like. This is how he should be. And I'm suffering because he's not here. Why is it that the neighbors have better car than I do? And why am I not smart enough? I want to be smarter. You know, it's the simplicity of childhood. I was reading something biblical the other day about we are God's children. And there's a lot of ways that you can receive the wisdom of God out of your heart, because that's the home of God. Life. And the innocence and prayer is a kind of communication. You know, when I pray for people, which I have a long list of people that's on my prayer list, I pray for their recovery. I pray for their peace. I pray that they have love in their heart, and I pray that they turn to God. And in the end, I say always, thy will be done. So, and swaha. So it relieves me of any attachment to that. Huh? And it permits in my mind, well, I don't have a mind, by the way, it permits in my awareness that awareness does not belong to me, that whatever I'm asking, there is a destiny of God's will. What is, you know, then you can say, well, what is God and who is God? And you can go anywhere from sitting, a great, great light of a man sitting on a throne of angels, where these certain angels, the cherubim, are singing the glories of God at all times. It's beautiful. I'm all for it. Or you can see God in everyone and everything, because that's accurate. You can meet God in love, and well, there's just so many avenues to realize God inside yourself and your own experience. The prayer is very innocent, and it's a great desire, and it is a desire, you are right, that the goodness of life bless someone. That's different than the desire that I don't have what I should have and why don't I. You understand?
I understand. Thank you, Shantima. You are my light on my way, and I want to say thank you for that.
Thank God for that.
And I will
say thank God in the end. Thank God. Whatever that means to you, thank God. Thank God. Thank you. So is our time up? Or we have Michael O'Shea, and then we'll close. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Shantima. Namaste. Nice to be with you in Baltimore.
Are you with me in Baltimore?
Yes, I am with you wherever you are, yeah.
Yeah, good.
I'm with you. I wanted to bring forward, I've been reading chapter 8 of the Bhagavad Gita and listening to your teaching on it. But something that really struck me, and it just seems like such an obvious, well, I don't know, obvious or what, but it's just something I'd never really thought about before, is when Krishna says, at the hour of death, when a man leaves his body, he must depart with his consciousness absorbed in me. And you know, I never, you know, I've never thought about how important it would be as we get to the end to be, well, mindful is not a good word for it, but how important it would be is what we're thinking about. You know, what are we thinking about? What's on our mind? What's on our thoughts at the very end? That could be really important.
Oh,
and
some people have realization at the last breath.
Yeah,
that happens a good deal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, a therapist I went to years ago, she did a lot of work in palliative work, and she said people die the way they live. You know, I mean, if I'm living in God, then I'm going to die that way. I don't believe in reincarnation, and I don't not believe in it, but it's kind of like, you know, what do I want to take with me at the very end? So it's worth thinking about for me, you know, it's worth, yeah.
The reincarnation point, there is only one being, so to speak, being, that's the word that I find, that is incarnated any time and is constantly reincarnating, and that is God. At least God's creation. Because there is the imperishable and undefinable and I have to let the word arise. The immaterial, unformed beingness, which supports all that is formed and changing at all times inseparably. And that is the only incarnation there actually is in the illusion of existence, because you remember that Krishna said, I thought you. And that's the incarnation. And you are not your dream, and you are not, you cannot be separate from your dream, but you are simply not your dream. You can't be separate from what you're experiencing, and yet you're not your experience, be it your mind, your body, or anything else. But God is the only incarnate.
Is that to say that if God never dies, I never die?
Well, because God never died.
Yeah.
Brahma closes his eyes for a million millennium and takes a little rest from all of this, and then opens his eyes to the Satyuga and the Dharma again. And and the cycles go on.
Yeah.
It is said. And I don't fight with anything that I hear that seems to be beyond my awareness or my experience. I always feel that just to listen. I don't fight with any of it. Yeah,
it's wonderful, yeah.
So what is incarnate is the creator, whatever that is, according to Hinduism, it's Brahma, is reincarnating his creation or her creation or the creation at all times. So it's not really, I mean, we live in a few worlds at once. Your personal world, your spiritual world, isn't it?
Yeah, and that we're part of that reincarnation. Like it's all being reincarnated now.
You're not a part, you're the whole. There are no parts to a whole. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And I just can't thank you enough for the Bhagavad Gita teachings. It's just open that.
Thank you for that. I don't hear very often whether people like it or not, or whether they're getting anything out of it or not. Yeah. I mean, it's a long transmission. We're not even halfway through it. So I didn't even imagine that it would take, what, a year and a half to transmit.
Yeah. But it's such a, you know, it's so deep. It just, there's layers and layers and layers to it. Yeah. Yeah.
Profound beauty. I'm glad it's touching you. I'm glad that it brings something out of you that, whatever it brings. Last night, one woman says, I have no questions anymore. And I thought, this is, well, okay, I doubt that. But, whatever you say, I'm not going to fight with you because this is your experience. But then she said, what I want is important questions. What was a word, Durga? Do you remember? What I want is what kind of questions? Inspiring questions. I think we can use that. She was lost for a question. And I said, well, how did any of this come into being? So she'll sit with that one for a while.
Yeah.
And she liked it a lot.
Me too.
Me too. It's one of my big, I live with a question mark on my forehead. And one lady said yesterday, I don't need any answers. I said, well, you're not going to get any here either.
Well, questions beget questions.
Questions beget questions, and answers are a dead end. If you want to, I would say it's urgent to discover where the answer is taking you. It's a map. It's not the end it's not the end all. So anyhow, thank you for letting me go on about yesterday's stuff.
Thank you, Shanti.
I love you.
Love you too.
Give Margaret my love too.
I will. You bet.
Namaste. So it's time to go. I think that that's all we have on the hands. That's right. It's time for me to go, and we're going to listen to Pradeep and I always pronounce her name wrong. Exactly what I would have said, but I'm so used to pronouncing it incorrectly that I have a bit of trepidation when I do. Okay, so you please offer your song, and I'm going to look through the assembly.
Yes.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Guru
It's really beautiful.
The
song is really, the chant is really beautiful. Thank you so much.
Namaste. Namaste.